We're talking coaching this evening. Janine Ahlers is the Academic Director and Senior Lecturer at the Center for Coaching at UCT at the Graduate School of Business. How I Make Money brought to you by Bidvest Bank. Bidvest Bank, built for your business. Now, I was told by a mutual acquaintance that I should talk to you about coaching. And this he's a disciple of coaching. He's worked in the corporate sphere and he's doing consulting work. And he's going, oh, you must do coaching. And I had other people on the call with me roll their eyes at coaching. So I went and did not a particularly deep dive, more of like a shallow racing dive into the world of coaching, and ran screaming from the internet because it is an industry, sadly, fraught with all kinds of fly-by-nights. And I said to John Latham earlier today on Cape Talk, said to him, all kinds of charlatans and snake oil salesmen. It feels like a place that, you know, you walk across the street and you can become a walking across the street coach. It is, I think, quite a difficult industry in which to be taken, to be identified as being serious about it.
It is indeed, yes.
Okay, so take me through it. I mean, how do you then shape coaching in a way that is treated seriously? Because I think lots of businesses, lots of leaders in business do look for coaching.
Well, I'd say there's a reason they look for coaching, and that is because coaching done well actually does make a difference. It can truly, truly help people. I think where the snake oil salesman and that approach came in is people felt, well, it looks so easy to do. And if I just have a bit of advice here and I'm listen to you a bit, actually, quite often people can unstick themselves. So we call that problem-solving coaching. And it can be very a sympathetic ear, a friend you're sitting next to, a good line manager. You can sit and listen. You ask a few questions and the person goes, oh, that was amazing. That was so helpful. Thank you very much.
I'm a genius.
Yes. I'm a genius. Well, and I'm a coach, yes. Right? See, I'm such a coach because everyone comes to me to ask me for advice.
Now, those are people we call good listeners. And my understanding, my elementary understanding of coaching is 99% of coaching is shutting up and allowing that person, with occasional prompts and occasional prods and occasional nudges, perhaps, to find the solution to their own problem. So clearly being a good listener is an essential attribute.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, a lot of people who come on our courses, after the first day, they go, you know what, I thought I was a good listener, but I'm not really. I now realize. So yes, I think so. Absolutely. That is the core foundation, is good listening. There are a number of skills that are, you would think, easy to do that make for the core of a good coach, which is listening, open-ended questions. But then there's a trick that happens over there, and that is, can you listen without judgment? And that's why 20 years later, I've been here in this profession for over 20 years, I still have to work on it regularly and check myself. Am I truly listening without judgment?
Because sometimes, don't you want to sit there and go, are you serious? Really? You think that's a problem? Grow up. Get out there and face your demons. Occasionally, I'm sure you must think it, but you can't possibly express it.
You can't express it. And the trick is to know you're thinking it.
Ah.
And then
so it's allowed. You're allowed to think it.
Okay. Well, yes. If you can then take a breath and let it go. And then listen again with a fresh ears. That's what's hard.
Do we understand listening, actually, as a concept? Because I think there's listening. That's one part of listening and affirming the person's issues or whatever the case is. But listening is a massively, true listening and constructive listening is a massively active process because you're engaging in every single aspect and tone and timbre and content in the words that are used, in the position that the person is taking. You've really got to be alert to every signal that a human is sending.
And not only with our ears. So we often will talk to our coaches who are studying with us. We'll say, listen with your eyes. And also notice that we have mirror neurons in our nervous system. The body has the capacity to align with what they call mirror neurons so that you listen with your whole nervous system. So we listen with our bodies as well, which is way beyond body language. We're not talking body language, but You know, I, for example, if I'm tuned in to the person I'm coaching, I will get goosebumps just before they have an insight. Just before.
And you can see it building. They're coming to a realization and their eyes are getting a bit bigger and they're going, ah, it's happening. There's a moment.
I don't know. I don't always see something, but I sense it.
Okay. Mm. No, there's a signal being sent or whatever.
There's a signal somehow, so we know. But that takes years and a lot of practice.
And also not to preempt the signal, because the excitement when something is building, you're going, you see, you got it! And they go, well, got what? And you've broken the magic, I suppose. There's always that risk of being a little bit too active as the listener.
Indeed. Plus, you don't know what they're going to get, because you're listening without judgment. So you're not there to push them to a solution you want them to get to, and you're not there to maneuver them into seeing what you want them to see.
But that's the big distinction, isn't it, between mentoring and coaching. Coaching appears more passive, although it is a very active process. Mentoring is, well, when I was in your position, what I did was this. I think you should go and try the same thing. Off you go. Come back next week and tell me what you did.
Exactly.
That sort of thing. Whereas coaching is, so how do you feel? And what do you think you should do about it?
Well, amongst other things, yes. But that is the key difference between mentoring and coaching. And I'll say to all my coaches, who's your mentor? And make sure that I'll coach them into developing the capacity to ask for help and support. So that would be the difference between a coach who's well-trained, doesn't look at fixing the problem. A coach will look at what is it about how this person is thinking or feeling or in engaging with the world that causes them to be stuck right there, which you don't know as the coach because you're not that person. So that person has to start to build the insight. And then what is it that they need to do differently that will allow them to address the issue? So at the core of it, as a coach, certainly an integral coach, you're looking at developing your coachee's capabilities so that they can address things for themselves.
How and why did you get into coaching?
Synchronicity.
There we go.
Yes. So I landed up working at the business school after many years of feeling quite empty and not sure what to do.
Did you
myself.
Work in corporate before?
I did. So I did a BA at university. I was told when I left I was completely unemployable, completely, because I couldn't type. And so my violin teacher, because I played the violin since I was six, said, why don't you audition for the National Orchestra, which I did. In those days it was PACT and SABC orchestras, just combined. And I didn't get in as a musician, but I got in as a orchestra organizer. So I had to run around organizing 120 musicians, and I learned a lot about human beings and how to cajole people into doing things they don't want to do. So I think that was probably
particularly creative human beings, people who are not used to being told what to do. They're very good at following the notes on a page, but don't tell them when to turn up and how to turn up and just how much, I don't know, interpretation to put into the script.
Exactly. And then, but after 3 years, it was like, I've been there, done that. I was doing as much as I was playing and organizing, and wasn't enough. So I thought, I'll get a real job in the real world, which is what musicians call the corporate world. So the real job. So again, I was unemployable, apparently, but I answered an advert in the paper for a printing company in Boysen's Reserve. And I drove there, and I thought, I cannot possibly work in this company. So I was very difficult in the interview, and I demanded double my salary at the orchestra that I thought was well paid. And they gave me the job. I think I was probably, because, I think it was a 4,000 rand a month or something.
Oof.
You know, vast. And then that was corporate. So I started working there, and I kept being offered opportunities, mainly in the human resources space, and then to open a branch here in Cape Town doing the investor relations or the annual reports. So I made a point of visiting every FD in Cape Town, doing research on how to make a good report. And that lasted 10 years, but all the time I was feeling empty. And I was kept looking, so I kept working harder, trying different portfolios, managing differently. I was convinced if I became a director of this company, I would feel complete. I became a director and I felt very incomplete. It did not help. I tried everything. I went to study an MBA. I kept myself very busy. And eventually I realized this is still not working.
Had you had any coaching at that point? Had you had any mentorship at that point? Were you reading, trying to figure out what to do next? Or were you just putting your head down and running like a bull in a china shop?
I was a very ambitious running person, determined to climb that ladder and make my mark. And no coaching, no mentoring, no. I had informal mentoring from the company.
So what was the catalyst then that got you into the world of coaching?
Well, I went back to the GSB where I'd done my MBA.
Okay, that's connection, right.
And I was offered a job of teaching company analysis, which is on the MBA program. And they gave me an office and said, you know the course because you did it 10 years ago, so teach it. That's how one gets into academia.
I always wondered.
Well, so I started, and that's when I asked this person who was an ex-consultant to come and help me. His name is Craig O'Flaherty, and he came in and he helped me on the course as a guest lecturer. And he said he's studying coaching, and I said, "What is that?" And he said, "Well, let me explain." And his vision was to start a center for coaching in Africa, the first one, because back in 2001, no one had heard of coaching.
No. It's what sports people do. I mean, if you're a tennis player, exactly. You get a coach to improve your serve. You get a coach to improve your headspace. But, I mean, in some corporates, I forget his name. I was trying to remember this in a conversation on Saturday. The Corp Doctor at First Rand was like the most famous person. And he'd done when the Proteas played cricket. He was the guy and helped guide them and stuff. And there was just a sense that there was definitely a gap in the market. There was definitely a need for people to be guided to, you know, just be better humans, to think differently, to be open to ideas, whatever it is that they were struggling with. We're talking this evening to Jeanine Arliss, who is the Academic Director and Senior Lecturer at the Center for Coaching at the UCT Graduate School of Business. She's very kindly come to us this evening. She's got a whole cohort beginning tomorrow to go through her program, but has given us some time this evening. We'll get back to her in a moment. Jeanine Arliss is Academic Director and Senior Lecturer at the Center for Coaching at UCT Graduate School of Business. How does coaching go from my initial perception of it, which was anyone can be a coach? There are lots of these short courses and everyone is offering similar looking things that are clearly, clearly not worth any tangible value in the real world. How do you position what you do at the Graduate School of Business versus what is available in 10,000 places on the internet, which is of little reputable value.
Mm. As coach training.
Yeah.
Mm. So one of the big differentiators is the fact that we've aligned with the International Coaching Federation, which the ICF, which does accredit coach schools, and they've become more strict. So we just had to jump through a whole bunch of hoops to get sorted out there.
Because initially, when you proposed this to the Graduate School of Business, they went, "You want to do what?"
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
That's what people wear hemp do.
Mm. Yes. I was told I was ruining my academic career. And I said, well, because they needed an academic director for. So the GSB said, look, you can run these programs as an independent company, the Center for Coaching, under exec ed. And we will associate with you so that we can disassociate if it doesn't work. So we said, all right, that's a good idea. And I'm the fulcrum. I'm the academic link because I'm employed by UCT and a director at the center.
Okay.
So that's how we keep credibility. So the first thing is credibility. Always look at the coaching school and say, where is it accredited? So our material, for example, comes from San Francisco, from the USA. One of the longest standing coach education schools in the US, New Ventures West, that's where the source of our material comes from. So it's got a track record, it's got a history, it's got a methodology. Then look at the other professional accreditations like the ICF, which nowadays is most people in South Africa have heard about it. It's very well known here. Another thing is the university. I mean, we are you know, really thorough. So the Faculty of Commerce would never accredit our courses if we couldn't jump through all the hoops. You know, the literature review of this, it took me like 4 years to get all the literature research done to look at the grounding of, for example, our approach, which is integral coaching. So there's a lot of richness and depth and academic standing behind your model. Whereas some coach schools are just, it's a model that somebody's made up, a consultant who has made up a thing and a flow, and then they throw in a bit of this and that and how to listen, and they call that coaching. So look at the academic rigor of what it is you're working with. But then also, how are you taught? So, for example, we work on the premise that two tracks learning. You need to, of course, learn the skill of how to coach, but you also need to learn about yourself, because you, the human who are doing the coaching, you actually...
You're imposing yourself on other people, and they are assuming, presumably paying money for you to improve their outcomes. So you better know yourself fairly well. Yes.
You better, yeah. And a lot of people arrive on our doorstep, like our 40 that are starting tomorrow, thinking they're going to learn a technique to apply to others, only to discover that the training involves first applying all of those insights and those models and that theory to yourself. Then you apply it to each other. And then you go out and apply it to another human. So there's a learning process where we take adult learning theory really seriously. So adults learn best when they're in a safe environment, when they don't feel there's a threat of judgment or ridicule. We do a lot to keep that in, and with a lot of support and encouragement, whilst insisting on rigor and depth.
It's a really interesting space, and I find coaches are chatting to a CEO the other day who's brought a coach into his business, and this person is seeing everybody in the business. It's several hundred people, and is really, I mean, it's other clients outside, because you've got to be objective and you've got to see other people. You know, you've got to, you know, not get caught up in one entity. And you just watch the interactions between this coach and the people, and it's a really interesting dynamic, because people are hungry for guidance. And for all of the stuff that's in books, all the stuff you can find on YouTube, all of the stuff that you think you know, people really are looking for answers. And I think that the role of coaches within organizations is probably in its embryonic stages in many companies in South Africa.
Well, so first of all, a coach won't give guidance and give you answers.
It's what they're looking for, though. They're looking for the guidance
development.
And answers.
They're looking for development.
That's the word.
Yes, they're looking for development. People want to grow. They want to have meaning. They want to have purpose in life. So more and more organizations are actually coming to us. I've had, I don't know, 3 inquiries this week from major corporates who are looking at...
And it's only Monday.
Oh, my gosh. Don't say that, yes. But it feels... Well, looking for in-house coaches. Yeah. Looking for training to develop an in-house coaching capacity.
Should coaching be in-house, or should it come from the outside? You want to immerse somebody in your company for a period of time, I think. But to have in-house coaching, you start getting groupthink. You start getting, I don't know, and then you're part of the corporate structure. Are you independent? Can you be trusted? How... You know, I wonder about the independence of the coach, or the perceived independence of a coach within an environment.
So over the last 20 years, we've supported a lot of companies to do just that. And what we've discovered is that some organizations, you can get an in-house coach as a cadre of coaches who are line managers who coach outside their divisions, which can be very helpful and effective. Okay. It's not the same as an external coach. You won't get the same level of depth of sharing. An in-house coach is probably not going to do deep personal developmental coaching, 12 sessions over the year.
And it feels a bit more orchestrated, and it's pushing you in a direction rather than, this is the way we do things around here, so let me come and coach you on how to do that sort of stuff, rather than the let's make you better at who you are and what you do.
I would hope not. No, okay. No. I would hope an internal coach who's been properly trained is not going to come with an agenda to get you to do what the company wants you to do, then nobody's going to trust them. An internal coach is somebody who can be deployed, ideally not amongst their own staff, but to help people get unstuck. And they would do what I would call either situational coaching or competency-based coaching. So we teach in a two-day course situational coaching. We call it a leader's coach. You can get a cadre of in-house coaches quickly in 2 days with additional support afterwards. You can really catalyze a coaching approach in your leadership style. You want a slightly richer capacity within certain line managers who want to do multi-session coaching of people within the organization. That's competency-based coaching. We would take 6 months to develop that capacity for you. And that is where you can work with someone still on a kind of level that a person would be prepared to share with you, but to develop their capabilities, perhaps as let's say they've been promoted, you want to support them like that. Develop leadership capabilities and work with them there. Then the true developmental coaching, which our professional coaches do, which have been another year of coaching, so that's at least 2 years of study, those caliber coaches are, I would say, probably best external coaches, because you're going in, you're spending 12 sessions, which is about 9 to 12 months with somebody. You're working with them in a real shift in their way of being, actually. You're working with the actual way of being.
It's a fascinating world. Thank you, Janine Ellis, who's the Academic Director and Senior Lecturer at the Center for Coaching at UCT Graduate School of Business. It's Eyewitness News Time at 8.